Grand Valley Middle Schoolers in Battlement Mesa could be allowed back in school today following an investigation of odors in the building Wednesday. According to a Garfield County press release, students were evacuated to LW St. John Elementary School around 11 a.m. yesterday. Grand Valley fire crews found a slightly elevated reading of hydrogen sulfide gas, but the source has not been determined. Students returned to the middle school building around 3:30 p.m. when crews verified that the odors were no longer present. The fire district will test the building again today to make sure it's safe for the students to return. Garfield County environmental health officials are also taking air samples from the building. The State Senate Agriculture, Natural Resources, and Energy Committee killed a bill Wednesday that would have increased the distance between schools and oil and natural gas facilities. Western Colorado Congress and Grand Valley Citizens Alliance, two West Slope groups who advocated for the change, said in a press release that they are disappointed by the party line vote on the bill, which would have shifted the setback distance from 1,000 feet from school buildings to 1,000 feet from school property lines. Senator Kerry Donovan, a Democrat from the 5th District, which includes Chaffee, Hinsdale, Delta, Gunnison, Eagle, Pitkin, and Lake counties, was the only West Slope legislator on the committee to vote in favor of the bill. Four new bills have been introduced in the Colorado legislature aiming to curb the influence of money in elections, to specify limits on expenditures and contributions, one of which is for county office candidates. Two others define and require disclosure of those who pay for campaign ads. Eric Galatis has more.
Colorado lawmakers are being asked to shine some light on how so-called dark money influences political campaigns in the state. Four new bills introduced in the House would set limits on campaign spending and require additional disclosures for who's footing the bill. Peg Pearl with Colorado Ethics Watch says the measures would help voters cut through the noise of seemingly endless campaign ads by following the money,
so that voters have some sort of information to evaluate what's the noise and what's the real information about candidates that's worth paying attention to.
House Bill 1259 calls for closing a loophole that allows unlimited spending by independent committees, and 1260 would set limits for the first time on how much money can be raised by county candidates. 1261 and 1262 are attempts to create more transparency and accountability by revealing the names of groups promoting candidates through the entire campaign. Even though some names, such as Coloradans for Clean Air, seem designed to hide a group's true political goals, Pearl says HB 1261 would give voters a fighting chance to learn more from online databases. She says under current law, campaign backers are allowed to remain anonymous between the end of June and early September.
That's the piece of the puzzle that House Bill 1261 is trying to fix, to actually give the name of the committee to the voter when they receive the advertisement.
The four proposals introduced by Democrats could be heard by the House State Veterans and Military Affairs Committee as early as this week. If passed by the House, the bills would then have to clear the Republican-controlled Senate. This is Eric Galatis reporting for KDNK.
Hot on the heels of Monday's $1.5 billion deal to buy Winter Park, Steamboat, and four other Interwest ski areas, the new Aspen Ski Co. KSL Capital Partners Alliance is now buying more than 6,000 acres of ski terrain in Southern California. A press release issued Wednesday states that the ski resorts include Mammoth Mountain, June Mountain, Snow Summit, and Bear Mountain. The deal is due to close in the third quarter of 2017. No price was announced. The Denver Post speculates that KSL and Aspen Ski Co. could offer a season pass that could include Aspen, Snowmass, Squaw Valley, Steamboat, Winter Park, two ski areas in Canada, and one in West Virginia. Republican Congressman Scott Tipton represents Colorado's 3rd District, which includes most of the Western Slope. KDNK's Amy Haddon Marsh spoke with him this week. In part one of the conversation, Tipton talks about the Local Law Enforcement for Local Lands Act, President Trump's American Energy Independence Order, and climate change.
Congressman Tipton, how will you vote on the Local Enforcement for Local Lands Act? It would do away with federal law enforcement officers on federal lands.
Yeah, I think if I recall right, that's been brought up. Is that 622 Chaffetz's bill?
Yes.
If I recall correctly?
Yes.
Yeah, the bill has just been introduced and assigned to committee. There is no planned markup on that legislation. If it does come as is presented right now, as I understand it, it's not something I would support. I visited with our local sheriff. They don't have the resources or the manpower to be able to be responsible for all of the public lands. As the sheriffs have noted to me, they are typically the first responder, however, on public lands, which speaks to the important provision that we put in our request for the appropriations process to make sure the PILT monies are fully funded out to our counties to be able to help our local law enforcement personnel.
The West Slope, as you know, is dependent on snow for water. And the Colorado Water Plan is a direct result of forecasts that include the effects of climate change on future water supply. President Trump's American Energy Independence Order rolls back regulations such as the Clean Power Plan. It disbands the Interagency Working Group on the Social Cost of Greenhouse Gases. It lifts the federal coal leasing moratorium and restrictions on oil and gas and mineral development and production. Some say that this will increase U.S. contributions to climate change and wreck the Paris Agreement. What are your thoughts about the AEIO?
You know, I think what we saw actually in terms of a rule that was proposed, and I think it's important to be able to note that the Clean Power Plan was not a bill that was proposed just like the one we were just talking about. This came out in a regulatory fashion out of the bureaucracies. If you look at that, it had overlaps in terms of some of the requirements that we're going to be putting in, which are going to be increasing costs for consumers, failed to recognize the advancements that we've had in technology. To cite the EPA as an example, methane releases in the United States are down 4.5%, 5% since the late 1990s, and that number is continuing to improve as we're becoming more efficient with our fuel sources and starting to expand out and all of the above strategies. The rules and regulations that come through, I know of no one who opposes good, sensible rules and regulations, but this was an overreach that we were seeing in terms of the duplicative nature of the rules and regulations that were coming out, and we need to make sure that we're working twofold to be able to make sure that we're doing things in an environmentally sensitive way and looking out for costs that consumers are incurring as well. One bill that I have introduced or will be introducing is Planning for America's Energy Future Act, which literally calls for all of the above. And we enumerate in the bill wind, solar, geothermal, hydroelectric, oil, gas, oil shale, coal, that entire portfolio of the mix, not eliminating any environmental requirements, but making sure that we're using the entire portfolio. And I think we're seeing real progress in our country. A lot more usage of wind and solar. Hydroelectric, good example, one of the few bills that was signed into law was my Small Hydroelectric and Jobs Act, and the first example of that working was in Chavano Falls outside of Montrose here in the 3rd Congressional District with a good renewable resource of hydroelectric power to generate clean energy. So it is that entire portfolio that I think is desirable, and we need to make sure that we've got that balance that is, again, looking out for the environmental sensitivity and also the consumers and the costs that they're going to be paying.
There are a couple of things that are happening in Colorado. The, as you probably know, Lafayette, Colorado, was the first city in, actually, it's the first law in Colorado that it's an ordinance that allows for a right to a healthy climate for people and nature and has banned oil and gas extraction as a violation of that right. And the Colorado Court of Appeals recently required the COGCC to consider a petition of young people who want the COGCC to stop issuing fracking permits. And I think some of this has to do with climate change. The National Farmers Union wants President Trump to keep U.S. in the Paris Climate Agreement. Some people really believe that the AEIO, this American Energy Independence Order, will really increase U.S. contributions to climate change.
You know, certainly respect people's opinion in terms of wanting to make sure that we're doing things in an environmentally sound way. Part of the challenge is it can't just be the United States. I think when we, again, look at the technologies that we're employing, the development that we've seen, I've toured our Vestas facility here in the 3rd Congressional District, the solar arrays in the San Luis Valley in terms of renewable resources. We recognize that they cannot yet handle the base load that is going to be there. And to be able to keep the lights on and the heat going or the cooling going, depending on the time of year. And we're making good progress in terms of sensible policy that's going to be environmentally sound, calling for all of the above in the United States. We're not seeing concurrent actions that are coming out of our counterparts, say, in China and India. And I believe that in the United States, we have an awareness and a commitment to make sure that we are doing it right. And I suspect that we will continue to pursue that policy. But it isn't a go-it-alone sort. We do need to see the results out of these other countries as well.
Congressman Scott Tipton, thanks very much for talking with me today. I look forward to talking to you next month.
You bet. Pleasure to visit with you. Have a good afternoon.
Congressman Scott Tipton represents Colorado's 3rd District and speaks with KDNK at the beginning of the month. Now, Amy's got an update on mumps.
Garfield County Public Health is investigating 4 adult mumps cases in the county. According to a press release issued Wednesday, the cases stem from the same initial exposure and are the first cases reported in 2017 in Garfield County. 63 cases have been reported in Colorado this year. Mumps is a viral infection that causes painful swelling in the glands of the cheek and jaw. Other symptoms may include low-grade fever, fatigue, loss of appetite, and headache. But about a third of the people who have the virus don't exhibit symptoms. The virus is spread through direct contact with respiratory droplets or saliva of an infected person. The incubation period is from 16 to 18 days. Wyvon Long, Garfield County Public Health Director, urges adults and kids to make sure that mumps vaccinations are current. Adults born before 1957 are generally considered immune to mumps and do not need to be vaccinated. More information about mumps is at colorado.gov/CDPHE/mumps or at the Garfield County Public Health Offices in Rifle and Glenwood Springs. For KDNK, I'm Amy Haddon Marsh.